Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, with most of the country's attention on the sudden dismissal of the FBI chair James Comey and the Trump-Russia connections, Donald Trump signed another executive order. This one would create a commission to review alleged voter fraud and voter suppression. According to reports, the Advisory Commission on Election Integrity would examine allegations of improper voting and fraudulent voter registration in states across the country. In response to the executive order, the ACLU's Voting Rights Project immediately filed a Freedom of Information Act request demanding that the government release any evidence it has to support Trump's claims of voter fraud. Donald Trump has repeatedly made baseless claims about millions of people voting illegally during the 2016 election. Today's guest, Ari Berman, argues that the commission will lead to even more voter suppression, and he says that is the real issue. The 2016 presidential election was the first election in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. So what happened? Well, a new study by Priorities USA found that voter ID laws in Wisconsin suppressed 200,000 votes, 200,000 votes, and Donald Trump won Wisconsin by only 22,748 votes. So what should we make of this and what happened in other states? Joining us to talk about voter suppression is Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation magazine and a fellow at The Nation Institute. Ari is the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And Ari joins us from New York. Hi, Ari. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me back, and good to see you in Washington a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was great to see you in Washington. Great to have you. Donald Trump's Commission on Election Integrity will be led by Mike Pence. Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach will be the vice chair. They both have a long history of making it harder to vote. Gerald Herbert told Talking Points Memo that Kobach has always been the Chicken Little of voter fraud. He said this will not be a scholarly or fact-based commission. Gerald Herbert is the director of Voting Rights and Redistricting Program for the Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan organization home to election law experts fighting for the fundamental right to participate in the political process. From 1973 to 1994, Jerry worked in the DOJ, where he served in many capacities. He was lead attorney in numerous voting rights and redistricting lawsuits. And Jerry Herbert joins us from Washington. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you for having me again on your show. And just one correction, it's Jerry Hebert, not Herbert.
Hebert, thank you. It's spelled both ways here on my run sheet, so thank you for correcting me. Well, it's great to have you back, Jerry. Let's dive in and just, can you both talk to us about voter fraud? Ari, does it exist? What are the numbers? What does the research actually tell us about voter fraud?
The research tells us that voter fraud is a very small problem in American elections, that it occurs very infrequently, and when it does occur, it's usually detected. So there's been a bunch of studies on this, both in the 2016 election and then in previous elections. In the 2016 election, a review by the Washington Post found only four cases of confirmed or possible voter fraud out of 135 million votes cast. That was roughly equal to 0.00002% of total votes. Reviews from a bunch of different states that have been done found that most, a few hundred cases of possible fraud, not anywhere close to the millions that Donald Trump said. There have been previous studies. For example, there was one study that found that there were only 31 cases of voter impersonation, the kind of voter fraud that a voter ID law would stop, out of more than a billion votes cast from 2000 to 2014. So every single reputable academic study finds that voter fraud is a very small problem, that we have checks in place to detect fraud when it exists, on the rare occasion that it does exist, and those who commit it are caught. And that's why I think this Commission on Election Integrity that President Trump created is not a voter fraud commission, it's a voter suppression commission, because there is no voter fraud. The only reason that Republicans are talking about voter fraud over and over and over is because they want to perpetuate this myth in order to build support for policies that will make it harder to vote, like voter ID laws, like cutting early voting, like requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote, like purging the voting rolls. This is their real agenda, and voter fraud is a manufactured crisis they created to build support for their policies.
Jerry, what would you add?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think creating an executive, by executive order, a commission to study this issue will not make the myth of voter fraud a reality. As Ari points out, serious academics have studied this issue despite wild claims, including those made by President Trump, that there are millions of illegals voting, when in fact, when offer no evidence to support their wild claims. And when academics actually study the issue, the amount of voter fraud that's happening is minuscule and is often not the kind of voter fraud, even when it happens, that can be detected or stopped by photo ID laws, which are often trumpeted as advancing the cause of preventing in-person voter fraud. People don't commit in-person voter fraud, because if I wanted to vote for Ari Berman and I showed up to vote, I have to hope that the poll officials don't know who Ari Berman is, because if they do, they know I'm not him. And consequently, I have to hope they don't know me, because if I go to vote for Ari Berman, they know that who I am. And that's committing a felony for one vote in front of government officials who are election officials, who often know everybody who comes to the polls. And of course, if I went to the polls to vote, it's likely Ari already voted, and so if I claim to be Ari, I'm going to get caught. So there are a few instances of mistaken voting, usually, not people trying to intend to commit voter fraud, but it's minuscule in its number.
Ari, how do you think the media are dealing with Donald Trump's claims of ongoing voter fraud? I just was looking up some headlines, and CNN has a headline, "Trump was going to investigate voter fraud. What happened?" Los Angeles Times, "The insanity of Trump's voter fraud inquiry." CNN, "Democratic lawmakers decry Trump's voter fraud panel." I mean, if you haven't read articles about the fact that voter fraud does not happen, as you said, 4 cases out of 135 million, you would think that maybe it does, because it gets so much attention.
Well, I think the media has been very problematic in terms of how they've covered this issue for a long time. When Trump started making these outrageous accusations, in many ways it was covered as a he said, she said thing, which is, you know, Republicans allege voter fraud, Democrats allege voter suppression. What's actually real? Then when Trump started making more outrageous statements, like saying millions of people voted illegally, the media did start fact-checking him more aggressively and saying that there's no evidence to these claims. But however, they haven't really gotten to the second part of the equation, which we do have a problem with voting in our country. The problem that we have with voting in our country is that many, many states are making it harder to vote for no good reason, and votes are being suppressed because of it. And that second part of the equation, the fact that votes are being suppressed, is what I think many in the media are missing. So they say, oh, it's so laughable that Trump is saying that voter fraud exists, it's just another conspiracy, but they're not saying, well, why is Trump keeping this conspiracy alive then? Is it just his bruised ego, or is there another thing at play, another reason that the White House is so intent on doing this? And so I think that I would like to see much more in-depth reporting on voters who are disenfranchised in 2016. There's so much talk about what Trump voters believe, and I think it's important to understand what Trump voters believe, but we have to recognize that a core of Americans aren't even registered to vote,
yep.
First off. So 60 million people completely sat out this last election. Then secondarily, there were people in states like North Carolina and Wisconsin that wanted to vote and couldn't. They didn't have the right IDs, or the waits were too long because the number of polling places were cut, or they were purged for the voting rolls. And those people get almost no coverage, even though it's absolutely outrageous that in the year 2016, we would still be preventing people from voting.
Ari, you often write about people who try to vote but can't for various reasons. How easy or difficult is it to find these people?
Well, you have to find them. I mean, they're not just sitting out there. You have to go to these states. You have to do the reporting. You have to talk to voting rights groups. You have to talk to local groups. Because really, the thing is that many of the people that have been disenfranchised are on the margins of society. They're more likely to be younger, or to be people of color, or to be people with a lower socioeconomic status. And so, when I go to a state like Wisconsin, when I go to a state like North Carolina, or I go to a state like Texas, I can find these people. But it starts, number one, with the intention to find them, which most reporters don't want to do, and secondarily, it requires a fair amount of shoe leather reporting to go and tell these stories. But I think that the stories themselves are compelling because I think they break through a lot of the clutter. It's one thing to debate whether or not people need a photo ID, or whether or not we need early voting, or whether or not we should make it easier to register. It's hard to deny the fact that an 85-year-old woman might have been disenfranchised because they wouldn't allow her to vote with an expired driver's license or something like that, or someone that I wrote about who made 7 trips to 2 different states trying to get a voter ID and couldn't. I think the personal stories are more compelling and can break through a little bit of the partisanship and the rhetoric on this issue.
And Jerry, why do you think we don't hear about these stories in the national media on a regular basis? I'm not even hearing many Democrats talk about it. They're so obsessed with talking about Russia, but they're not really talking about voter suppression.
Well, it's very difficult to get any people on Capitol Hill to talk about supporting voting rights because, as you correctly note, no one has really had the political courage to stand up, except for maybe John Lewis and a few others, to say it's time to revisit amending the Voting Rights Act to restore some of its power, because we continue to see example after example of people being denied the right to vote. I represent people in Texas who challenged the photo ID law, and one of my clients was a disabled veteran who, wheelchair-bound, was voting every year. And he went to the polls to vote after Texas photo ID law went into place, and the poll official came out to the car, because they have curbside voting there, and said, "Oh, hello, Mr. Carrier, are you here to vote today again?" And he said, "Yes, I am. My son is driving me." And she said, "Well, let me see your ID." And he handed her veteran's ID, and it was faded and old because he's in his 80s. And she said, "Well, I can't really make out the picture, so I can't accept this ID." And he was denied the right to vote. He couldn't even cast, he wasn't even given the chance to cast a provisional ballot. So this is somebody who went to war for our country and now is having the fundamental right to vote taken away. I will point out that the press has reported a little of this, but it's been very sparse. And as a result, the Campaign Legal Center on our website, and you can look on YouTube for this, has a Texas photo ID morass film, which is only about 10 minutes long, which has 3 different victims of the photo ID law in Texas talking about how the photo ID law there has deprived them of their voting rights, despite the fact that they have are citizens and have been voting in the past. So it's been very disappointing. And I'll just add one final point, which is that, you know, if the president in creating this commission claimed rightfully that he was trying to restore faith and trust in our elections, that's a laudable goal. But he shouldn't have fired, for example, the person who was going to conduct an investigation into the 2016 elections and Russian interference with them. That seems to me to also call into question the integrity of our election process, and he ought to be very concerned about that.
Jerry Hebert is Director of Voting Rights and Redistricting Program for the Campaign Legal Center. This is a nonpartisan organization home to election law experts fighting for the fundamental right to participate in the political process. From 1973 to 1994, Jerry worked in the DOJ, where he served in many capacities. He was lead attorney in a number of voting rights and redistricting lawsuits. We're also joined by Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation and the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And today we are talking about voting rights and voter suppression. What questions do you have for our guests about what we are currently facing? The 2016 presidential election was the first election in 50 years without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. And in a couple minutes, we'll be talking about this new study by Priorities USA. It found that voter ID laws in Wisconsin suppressed 200,000 votes. Donald Trump won Wisconsin by 22,748 votes. So why isn't this getting more attention? Why aren't Democrats spending more time talking about voting rights? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Frank in San Francisco. Hi, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I was wondering what your opinion is of Greg Palast's assertion that in the last election, thousands of votes in Republican-controlled states were nullified through cross-check and uncounted provisional ballots.
Ari, you were on Joy Reid's show on MSNBC yesterday with Greg Palast, and he talked about cross-check. First off, for people who aren't familiar with it, can you tell us what cross-check is?
Yeah, cross-check is a database that was founded by Kansas in the mid-2000s that compares double voting among states. So a state will submit its voter rolls, and then Kansas will run the information, and they'll say X number of double votes were potentially generated in the 2016 or in a different election, and about 30 states are part of cross-check. It actually predates Chris Kobach becoming Secretary of State of Kansas, but he's dramatically expanded the program. And this is something I'm actually looking into now, so I don't want to comment on anyone else's reporting, but what I will say is that it appears that this program is generating many what are known as false positives, because a lot of people have the same name, and cross-check uses very, very basic data to match people. You know, first names, last names, they don't use more sophisticated data. So someone named John Smith in Kansas can easily be confused with someone named John Smith in Nebraska, even if they have a different middle name, even if they have completely different records. But cross-check is not looking at those more sophisticated records. And so a lot of false positives are generated. Now, that doesn't mean that states are purging the voting rolls with this information, because all cross-check does is generate these names, and then states have to decide what they want to do with them. People aren't automatically purged from the voting rolls. So on the one hand, it's very, very concerning that people are being flagged as double voters, even if they're not. At the same time, I'm not convinced that all of the states are using the cross-check data to actually purge the voting rolls. I think it's more of a propaganda tool than anything else, but I'm still looking into it.
How many states use cross-check?
About 30 states.
30 states. Jerry, are you familiar with cross-check?
Yes, I am. Let me just say, though, that in addition to cross-check, there are some states that typically will take their voter registration lists, their database of people who are registered to vote in their state, and they will match it, try to match it against the list of, say, people in the Social Security database or the driver's license database. And if they can't find a match, they oftentimes do purge those people. In the case of Georgia, for example, in 2016, Georgia, when you submitted your voter registration application to become a registered voter, they looked at their database to see if your information matched perfectly with information about you that they had in either their driver's license database or the Social Security database. And if anything was different, in other words, my name is Joseph Gerald Hebert. So if my driver's license said Joseph Gerald Hebert, but when I went registered to vote in Georgia, I put J. Gerald Hebert, that would not be a perfect match, and so I was rejected. Mm. Tens of thousands of people this happened to in Georgia last year, and we, along with a number of other organizations, had to sue Georgia in advance of the election to make sure that all those people who really were trying to register to vote and participate in our democracy could actually go to the polls and vote, and all they had to do was show their driver's license or whatever the ID requirement was in Georgia. So I think this is kind of the vote suppression tactic du jour right now, which is for states to kind of use these databases in such a way as to knock people off the rolls or to make it harder for people to actually become registered voters.
Jerry, Greg Palast made a documentary about voter suppression, and he estimates that 1.1 million voters were removed from voter rolls where cross-check is being used, as Ari said, in 30 states. Now, Ari's going to do his own reporting on this, but what do you make of Greg Palast's number?
Well, you know, Greg has been studying voting rights issues for quite some time, and I have not looked at his particular study yet. I know Ari is doing some research on that issue, and I know others are as well. I do think that in the past, Greg has really put his finger on vote suppression and really illuminated this about 10 years ago with his terrific book. And so I would take his study pretty seriously. I think it's. I think this new commission should hear from people like that, like Greg and other experts who are serious about getting at facts instead of hyperbolizing just millions of illegals and hyperventilating over illegal immigrants voting when, in fact, it's not really happening.
The Pew Research Center points out that black voter turnout, the rate of black voter turnout, declined for the first time in 20 years in the presidential election. It fell to 59.6% in 2016 after reaching a record high 66.6% in 2012. And Greg Palast says you have to look at cross-check for that. He says that people tried to vote, but their names disappeared from voter rolls. Ari, are you going to be looking into this?
Yeah, I am going to be looking into this. And I will just say, Rose, I'd rather talk about my own reporting than Greg Palast's reporting. I think you should have Greg on if you want to ask him about his own reporting. But basically, what I will say is that there were a lot of different reasons why people couldn't vote or had a difficult time voting. It's not like there's one major thing that the Republican Party did. There were things like strict voter ID laws. There were things like cutting back early voting, leading to longer lines at the polls. There were laws that made it tougher to register to vote. There were states where people were purged from the voting rolls, maybe because of cross-check, maybe for other reasons. And so I think it was kind of all of these strategies together. And it wasn't like there was one reason why people didn't vote, and I think the fact that turnout was lower relates to suppression in a few different ways. Sometimes there are people that just are not going to be able to vote because they don't have the right documents, or they're not registered, or their polling places are limited. Then there's people who they might think, well, I'm kind of on the fence about voting. I'm already, you know, Barack Obama's not on the ballot. I'm not that crazy about Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it becomes harder to vote. And so they have even less incentive to vote than they did previously. So I think some people are trying to make it an either-or thing. Like, oh, well, people were dissatisfied with Hillary, so they didn't vote, or they were turned away because of voter suppression. No, the two relate to each other. The fact that it was made harder to vote meant that people who were already possibly on the fence about voting decided not to vote altogether, while at the same time, people who really wanted to vote, some of them were not able to because of these voter suppression laws, even though they went through, in some cases, a pretty Herculean struggles to be able to cast a ballot.
And speaking of those struggles, you mentioned the man who went to he took seven different trips to different public agencies in two states. Eddie Lee Holloway Jr. is a 58-year-old African-American man. He moved from Illinois to Wisconsin, which implemented a strict voter ID law for the first time in 2016. He brought his expired Illinois photo ID, his birth certificate, his Social Security card to get a photo ID for voting in Wisconsin, but the DMV in Milwaukee rejected his application because the name on his birth certificate said Eddie Jr. Holloway, the result of a clerical error when it was issued. You report that he made seven trips to different public agencies in two states, spent over $200 to correct his birth certificate, but he was never able to obtain a voter ID in Wisconsin. And before the election, his lawyer for the ACLU told you that he was so disgusted he left Wisconsin for Illinois. The thing about this story that's amazing, Ari, is so many people say, well, it's not a big deal. Just bring your ID with you when you vote. Well, he did all the right things, and he ended up spending so much time trying to get the right ID because of a clerical error, and he still couldn't.
Well, exactly. And I think that there are two problems. One is the fact that for 80 to 90% of the public, voter ID is not a problem because they have the proper ID. But for 10 to 15% of the public that doesn't have these IDs, and that's a lot of registered voters we're talking about in a state like Texas, as Jerry can tell you, that's over 600,000 registered voters. It can be a very big burden. The second thing is that people actually have IDs, they're just not accepted IDs. So Eddie Lee Holloway Jr., who I wrote about, he had an Illinois photo ID. That's a government-issued ID. He can use that ID to get on a plane. He can use that ID to cash a check. He can use that ID to buy liquor, all of the talking points we hear all the time about people having ID. But he couldn't use it to vote in Wisconsin because out-of-state IDs aren't accepted. Student IDs weren't accepted in Texas. You could vote with a gun permit, but not a student ID. So it's not just a question of ID. It's a question of defining IDs in such a way that many people who have valid IDs still can't even use them for voting. And we're seeing that about 10% of the electorate is disenfranchised by these laws. That's a lot of people. That's hundreds of thousands of voters in states like Wisconsin and Texas. Certainly enough to swing an election, and many, many people who could potentially be disenfranchised as a result.
Jerry, what would you add?
Well, first, it's absolutely correct to say, as Ari has pointed out, that people claim, well, everybody has an ID, and the fact is that there are literally millions of Americans who don't have the government-issued ID that some states have identified as being the ID that you need to vote. For example, in Texas, Texas weighed what kind of IDs would be permitted, photo IDs would be permitted, and they picked and chose among the various photo IDs that exist in the state and intentionally rejected efforts to have IDs for students, for example, at public universities. State employees, like the legislators who are enacting the vote suppression laws, their IDs were not good enough. Federal employee IDs, an FBI agent's ID would not be good enough, because they knew that those IDs actually, as it turned out in Texas, were disproportionately possessed by minorities, African Americans and Latinos in particular. So they picked and chose, and then as Ari noted, the IDs that they did allow by amendment was the license to carry a gun, which is disproportionately held by whites in Texas. About 90% plus of those people are white who have that ID. The other myth is that you need a photo ID to do everything these days. Well, that's not true. For example, I hear all the time in the legislatures, in particularly in red states, oh, you need a photo ID to get on an airplane. Well, you don't need a photo ID to get on an airplane. The TSA regulations specifically say that you will simply be subject to additional screening if you don't have an ID, not even just a photo ID. If you have no ID at all, you can still get on an airplane. And they claim you need an ID to buy Sudafed, which is not true, to pick up a drug prescription, which is not true. I mean, all these things are really just pretexts for denying people the right to vote and enacting vote suppression measures.
Jerry Hebert is director of the Voting Rights and Redistricting Program for the Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan organization home to election law experts fighting for the fundamental right to participate in the political process. Ari Berman is a senior contributing writer for The Nation magazine. He closely reports on voter suppression, and he is the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And today we are talking about voter suppression. After the break, we'll talk a little bit more about Donald Trump's new advisory commission on election integrity, and then we'll also talk about the new study by Priorities USA. It found that a voter ID law in Wisconsin suppressed 200,000 votes. Donald Trump won that state by 22,748 votes. This is your call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback at yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Thanks to the more than 2,000 listeners who contributed more than $344,000 to KLW during our May campaign. The drive is over, but we continue to count down toward our goal. As support keeps coming in, we keep getting closer to our campaign goal of $400,000. You can help us make it there with your donation at klw.org. All contributions by Thursday count toward the campaign. Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about The Beat Within. It's a writing and conversation program in juvenile halls in California. The organization serves over 5,000 youth workshops. The Beat Within also partners with organizations working to ensure that formerly incarcerated youth lead a healthy, nonviolent, and productive life. So we're going to talk about the best ways to keep kids out of jail. And this week, we're also putting shows together about how crucial services are funded through philanthropy or government funding. And we're also going to talk about oil money and California politics. But today, we are talking about voting rights and voting suppression in the United States. And today we're joined by Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation. He writes extensively about these issues, and he's author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. We're also joined by Jerry Hebert, director of Voting Rights and Redistricting Program for the Campaign Legal Center. And he worked in the DOJ from 1973 to 1994. He was lead attorney in a number of voting rights and redistricting lawsuits. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's spend some time talking about this new advisory commission on election integrity that it's going to be led by Mike Pence and Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach. He will be the vice chair. And as you report, Ari, they both have a history of making it harder to vote. What do you know so far about what this commission will actually do?
So first off, I think it's important to dispel a few myths about the commission. When the White House said they were announcing it, they said it was going to look at both voter fraud and voter suppression and all elements of voting in America. Well, if you look at the text of the executive order, voter suppression is not mentioned in the text of the executive order. What is mentioned in the text of the executive order are things like improper voting and improper voter registration, fraudulent voting and fraudulent voter registration, the very kind of things that Donald Trump has been talking about with no evidence, that Kris Kobach has been talking about in Kansas for years with very, very little, if any, evidence. And so that is going to be the focus of the committee. Mike Pence, to me, is just a figurehead. I think Kris Kobach is running this committee. This is going to be his commission. He has been recruiting secretaries of state, both Republican secretaries of state and then a few Democratic secretaries of state that for some reason or another decided to join this commission as well. But it really seems designed to perpetuate the myth of voter fraud. Number one, to make it seem like voter fraud is this huge problem in American elections when it is not. And then number two, to build support for policies that make it harder to vote. Because if you look at Kansas, where Kris Kobach is from, he's implemented a strict voter ID law. He's implemented proof of citizenship for voter registration, meaning you have to have a passport or a birth certificate or naturalization papers to register, which many, many people do not have at all, and certainly do not have that on them when they go to register to vote. He's run, as we mentioned earlier, this cross-check program analyzing double voters, which is producing a lot of false matches. He's the only Secretary of State in the country with the power to prosecute voter fraud cases, but he's only successfully prosecuted 9 cases out of 1.8 million registered voters in the state of Kansas. And so I think it's very, very worrisome that this is happening, that everything is going on. I mean, as Jerry said, they did this the same week that they fired the director of the FBI, who was looking into, beyond Donald Trump, Russian interference in the 2016 election. So we're not investigating the fact that our elections were hacked, very likely by a foreign power. Instead, we are spending all of this time, money, and resources analyzing a problem that does not exist when it comes to voter fraud, and we're completely ignoring the problem of voter suppression that is very, very real. And so the priorities are completely wrong here. They're completely backwards, and it's totally chilling that the Trump administration has decided to go down this route.
Jerry, what else do we need to know about Kobach and what he might do with this commission?
Well, Chris Kobach, as the vice chair of the commission, you know, he's a right-wing conservative vote suppressor. He is the king of vote suppression efforts, if there is one in the United States. He has a history of doing so. And let me give you a couple of examples of what I'm talking about. So even outside the area of voting, for example, he was in Kansas, sued the state of Kansas in 2004 over a law that granted in-state tuition to high school graduates born to undocumented immigrant parents, and the court ruled against his claims. And he's really been an attacker and harasser of Latinos in particular, or immigrants. He co-wrote the infamous Arizona Papers, Please law that was passed in 2010 that the Supreme Court ultimately struck down with respect to voting because of it being in contravention of the U.S. Constitution. You know, he served as counsel to the Immigration Reform Law Institute, which since 2004. Now, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups in the United States, said that that immigration reform group is the legal arm of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR, the acronym, which is a group whose leaders have historic ties to white supremacists, and they've made numerous racist statements. Kobach took a $10,000 PAC donation from a guy named John Tanton's wife. John Tanton was on the board of directors of FAIR, and here's what John Tanton and people like Chris Kobach, who support people like Chris Kobach, say. As whites, this is a quote, as whites see their power and control over their lives declining, will they simply go quietly into the night, or will there be an explosion? Close quote. So I really have concerns about somebody like Chris Kobach, I think, really leading the commission. You know, it's not much diversity when you have a right-wing vote suppressor in Chris Kobach and a right-wing ideologue and defender of photo ID laws like Mike Pence heading the commission. That's not much diversity. And even the Democrats that they're trying to recruit, secretaries of state from New Hampshire, well, you know, yeah, he may be a Democrat, but as I recall, there were some efforts that he made to make voting by students harder in New Hampshire. And the main secretary of state, he's trying to overrule a referendum of the voters, which is trying to bring about new voting systems that will make it easier for people to elect candidates of their choice. So I have real big concerns about not only the leadership, but the commission itself, and ultimately what might come out of it, because I think we may see some electoral laws being proposed in Congress as a result of this commission. And I'll be happy to talk about that, if you wish, further in the show.
Yes, please. We have a caller on the line who's also concerned about the commission. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. Boy, I hope too much feedback. Do you want me to turn the radio down?
Please.
Okay.
Okay, Greg is turning his radio down.
Okay,
Go ahead, Greg.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Okay. The concern I've got is this, because I think one of your guests just expressed it. I'm wondering, this has been going on for years, and Kobach has obviously been involved in this for a long time, based on what your guests are saying. So the question I have is, I'm wondering what impact, if any, this has had on the fact that Republicans now have control of governorships in a large number of states. They have control over assemblies and senates in a large number of these states. I have no idea if that's been part of this whole process. And secondly, to me it seems like it's very obvious that this is geared towards trying to make this harder and harder for people to vote. And in 2018, look what we're going to get if they're successful. So I guess the question is, how do you stop this since it's been going on for so long?
Ari, do you want to take that first?
Well, I mean, I think what we've seen is, both with voter fraud and with lots of other issues, is that once a myth takes root, it's very, very difficult to dispel. So for example, there is an overwhelming consensus on global warming, that climate change is real. But so many people have said over and over and over that climate change is some sort of fake issue, that a lot of people believe it. And so I think we're in a situation here where, you know, if people say voter fraud, someone believes it. Rose, unfortunately, I have an emergency and I'm going to have to leave the air now. I apologize for doing this, but I imagine Jerry can take it for the last 15 minutes.
All right. Hope everything's okay. Thank you, Ari.
Everything's fine, but I just have it's a hectic work day, so I need to deal with something ASAP.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Jerry, I was going to go to you. And, well, Ari, in his book, has some quotes by Republicans who for decades have been really honest about what they're doing with voter suppression, saying that we don't want blacks and Democrats to vote. I mean, a lot of Republicans have been very blatant about it. And since you were at the DOJ from 1973 to 1994 working on these issues, can you talk a little bit about that?
I sure can, and I'll address the comments and questions of the caller, too,
yeah,
because I think it's a good one. So, we, you know, over time, what we have seen is that people who are sponsoring vote suppression measures oftentimes claim that they're doing it for partisan reasons, when in fact, and in order to justify their so-called partisan goals to achieve advantage over the political party that's in the minority, they use blacks and Latino voters who vote traditionally in the state, overwhelmingly in the case of blacks, for Democratic candidates. So they say, well, we're just disenfranchising people based on their political affiliation, when in fact they're using that as cover for really vote suppressing black and Latino voters. And we didn't really see that much, you know, when I was in the Justice Department in 1973, most of the legislatures in the Deep South were all white. And so we were suing state and local governments throughout the South in particular, and in some cases in the West and North, but mostly in the South, to try to integrate some of those legislatures by breaking down laws and procedures that diluted black voting strength or Latino voting strength in some of the northern places. So it is something that we have seen for quite some time. I think if you look at the history of our nation, you see, you know, first white primaries, poll taxes, literacy tests, all kinds of measures that were oftentimes claimed to have been adopted in order to prevent voter fraud, but in fact were used simply to suppress minority votes from taking their rightful place in our democracy. So the caller, by the way, Rose, and this goes to his question, I mean, he says, well, what can we do about all this? Well, the commission is going to probably come out with some kind of a report that'll probably give some cover to people in the red states to adopt more laws that make it harder for people to register to vote and to cast ballots. And they'll probably come out with a report that will enable blue states actually to make it easier for people to register to vote, because they will see the commission's work as being a sham, which I think it will be. The biggest concern I have, and the way to deal with this, though, in the legislatures, even in red states, is, and this is what we've been able to do so far, but it takes a lot of work, you have to develop a legislative record with facts. When somebody is proposing a law, you have to say, well, you're saying that there's millions of illegals voting. Let's stick with Donald Trump's false claim. Well, what evidence do you have of that? And we have evidence by academic experts that say that that's not true. And I want to introduce those reports into the record, into the legislative record, because those are the kinds of things that we lawyers can then use in court to knock down these vote suppression laws after they get enacted, that the true facts are something different and that the legislature knew what the true facts were, but they declined to do anything about it. Now, I'll give you one example, Rose, of how I think this will end up playing out. So let's assume that this so-called Voter Integrity Commission, or whatever it's called, that they go out and they find that as a result of people going to get a driver's license in a particular state, there's something we have called the Motor Voter Law, which is the National Voter Registration Act. And it's been around since 1993. So when you go to the DMV, there's usually a checkbox that says, do you want to register to vote? And let's assume I'm a non-citizen, but I can get a driver's license, which you can in many states, and I check that box off, and I actually get put on the voter registration rolls. So I become a registered voter, even though I'm a non-citizen. I don't go and vote, of course, but I'm on the rolls. This commission will try to use those kinds of examples of non-citizens being on the voter registration rolls as examples of rampant voter fraud. They may find people registered to vote in two states. When somebody moves from one state to the other, you know, or somebody dies, oftentimes their name gets left on the rolls and it doesn't get taken off as quickly as election officials sometimes should. So they will use those examples, though, to say, let's repeal the DMV driver's license motor voter law, because obviously non-citizens are becoming registered to vote, and you know there are 36 people in Kansas or 25 people in Nebraska, and they'll kind of use those examples, I think, to try to push for federal laws repealing what is an effective voter law, which is the Motor Voter Law of 1993.
This might surprise you, Jerry, but just recently, a couple of weeks ago, the ACLU of Northern California, Project Vote, and a few other voting rights groups sued the California Department of Motor Vehicles for its failure to offer federally mandated voter registration opportunities to millions of Californians. They're arguing that the DMV is violating the law by making people jump through hoops to become voters here in California.
Right. That's the other half of this story. DMVs, they often look at their job as being a driver's license law enforcement agency. They don't look at their role necessarily as facilitating people's voting rights. So almost, I would say, you know, my estimate is probably 30 to 35 states across the United States have been sued, sometimes repeatedly, for failure to enforce the motor voter law by not processing applications when people submit them to the DMV and check the box off. And that's why, Rose, you alluded to something important earlier, I think, when you said, you know, people go to the polls and they find that they're not registered. Well, the reason that sometimes happens is because they go to the DMV, they fill out their driver's license renewal, they check the box off saying they want to be a registered voter. Maybe it's 2 months before the election or 3 months. They then go to vote, and the person says at the polls, you're not listed on the registration rolls. And they say, yeah, but I filled this paper out at the DMV. I should be on the rolls. So I think, you know, we need to correct those kinds of mistakes, and we need to sue states that are not properly implementing the motor voter law. I think the United States has one of the lowest rates in the developed world when it comes to voting. And we should be doing everything we can to encourage more people to vote, not fewer, to participate in our election.
Yeah, Jerry, before we get back to calls, I was just going to ask you, do we see these kinds of problems in other countries?
Well, the answer is no, we don't. In fact, I taught a course last year in Moscow where young lawyers there that I was teaching and law students were astounded that we have this problem in the United States, because they don't even have it in Russia, of all places, which is not exactly the pearl of democracy that we all want to hold up as the example. Because most of those places, the government provides IDs to everybody in the state or the country. Mexico, for example, another country that has universal photo IDs for people. So we seem to be the only Western democracy that goes out of its way to make it harder for people to do the most fundamental thing we can in our democracy,
wow,
which is choose our elected officials.
We have time for a few more callers. Let's go to Zach calling from New York. Hi, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm Zach Roberts. I'm actually one of Greg Palast's researchers on the cross-check story that we uncovered for Al Jazeera back in 2014. So I know quite a lot about Chris Kobach and this commission. The one main thing that I really wanted to add, though, especially if people are looking into Chris Kobach and cross-check, is that it's not just happening in Republican states. It's not just, you know, people who you'd think would be friendly towards the Donald Trump idea of voting rights. New York is actually under consideration of doing it. It's in Virginia, which had a, at the time that it accepted it, had a Democratic voting commission and people dealing with that field, and a handful of other states where we've had Democratic Secretary of States or election commissioners okay this. Also, the Presidential Voting Commission that Barack Obama put together, actually, if you read it, goes through, didn't get a lot of attention when it was published, unfortunately, because it kind of faded away, but it okayed cross-check. Barack Obama signed on to this, okayed cross-check. So the, one of the really dangerous things about cross-check is the fact that people from both sides of the aisle think that it's a safe way to, you know, clean up the voter rolls and get rid of all the, you know, supposedly dead people there or these supposed double voters that are around there. But we found that
Zach, sorry to cut you off. We're almost out of time. Can you stay on the line and give us your contact info because we really want to do a show about cross-check?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in. Jerry, I wish we had another hour. We're going to have to do another show about this. We barely even got to talk about this new study by Priorities USA that found voter ID laws in Wisconsin suppressed 200,000 votes, and Trump won that state by 22,748. What does this say to you? And I guess we're going to have to wait for more reports from other states with voter ID laws to find out how they affected turnout.
We are going to have to wait, unfortunately, but let's just say a couple of things about the most important metric I think that's out there, which is that when you're looking at the effect of some of these vote suppression measures, you know, the thing that people should be most worried about is the right to vote being really called into question here? Is the actual system of voting in the United States, is it really something that we should lose faith in? And the answer is no, because despite the vote suppression efforts that exist in some states, voting officials, for the most part, try to do a good job and try to maintain the integrity of the election process. We're not even in the ballpark of where voter fraud, for example, has called into question the results of some elections, but except in some states where you see statewide, like the Wisconsin photo ID law, where you see statewide measures being implemented that are knowingly going to have an effect on people and being a, and knocking them off the rolls so that they can't vote. And where those kinds of situations exist, and I hope that the Wisconsin case continues, it's still in litigation, and that the ACLU and others who are litigating that case ultimately get some relief, because If it is proven that 200,000 people weren't able to vote because of a law that Donald Trump won by 20,000, well, that tells me a lot about how these laws are really having the intended effect of changing the results of elections, and that's bad for democracy, it's bad for America, and it's bad for you and me.
Well, Jerry, thank you for your work, and we definitely have to do another show about this, so we'd love to have you back soon.
Thank you. I'd be delighted and a privilege to be on your show, Rose.
Thank you. Jerry Hebert is director of the Voting Rights and Redistricting Program for the Campaign Legal Center. He's been doing this for a long time. From 73 to 94, he worked in the DOJ, where he worked on voter suppression cases. And you can find more information about these issues. I hope you share them with your friends and family in your circles. This is such an important issue at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.